What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 103, and today we're going to be talking about why most Americans are unhealthy. Pretty much, why is everyone fat? That's what we're going to talk about. Me and Tom, we referenced a study, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, about a study that said 88% of all Americans are metabolically unhealthy. And we both kind of wanted to really take a deep dive into that article and see what it was really all about. So that's what we're going to do today, talk about why everyone is so unhealthy. But first, our article of the week this week is about Kerrygold. And that's a brand of butter that is very popular. It's kind of like Irish butter. And there's a lawsuit about it recently that Tom wanted to talk about. So Tom, you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, it's not really that recent. It started in 2018, and the case got dismissed in 2019. So it's not really that recent, but I mean, it's still pretty applicable today. We've talked about this in the past. I don't remember what podcast it was, just on how misleading labels can be. So what this lawsuit was about is on the label of Kerrygold butter, it says grass-fed. So the person interpreted that to be 100% grass-fed, which that's not what that means. If it was 100% grass-fed, it would say 100% grass-fed. So Kerrygold cows are fed corn, soy, and other grains, and other just kind of like fattening agents, like towards the end of their lifespan, just to get them super fat right before they slaughter. I mean, that's pretty much what happens with, I don't know, most cows on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really that different than any other type of butter, or at least kind of. But according to the label, it says grass-fed, and it has that premium price. So this person thought he was getting a premium product. The court agreed with Kerrygold that the label wasn't misleading, which it really isn't misleading because it is grass-fed technically. But I can see how that person came to that conclusion. I mean, me and you are just a little bit more educated. We know to kind of, read behind the label. We know, labels aren't always what they seem to be. So, yeah. Unfortunately, the case got dismissed. But, it is what it is.
Yeah, I totally see, honestly, both sides of the argument. And like you said, the packaging is kind of premium, the price is premium, so you think you're getting 100% grass-fed, dairy product, butter. And if people don't know, that's kind of the gold standard for anything coming from a cow, because grass is a cow's natural diet. So if you want a cow that is 100% the most healthy cow it can be, you want it to eat all year round its natural diet, and that would be grass. So a 100% grass-fed ribeye is going to be, 50% more than a cow that's grain-finished. And that's because, it's a premium product. And we have a podcast on grain-finished versus grass-finished beef. And you can find that on tntwellnessandnutrition.com if you're interested. There is a nutritional difference. It's not that big, to be 100% honest, to kind of ruin that whole podcast. But if you want to go through it and really find out what the difference is, listen to the podcast. But I don't know, you can't feed a cow, 100% grains, the cow will just die. So, of course, I think it has to be over 50% or maybe 60% of the feed for cattle has to be grass, just for the cow to maintain its health at all. And then, like Tom said, you can finish it with corn, soy, other grains to fatten the cow up. That's what Kerrygold does. That's what the vast majority of any sort of, cattle operation does. but they're still fed grass no matter what. So any label that says grass-fed on anything, dairy or beef-related, isn't lying. It's technically true. And that's why Kerrygold got off. So it makes sense.
Yeah, and I think cows spend at least like 85 to 90% of their lives on grass.
Yeah.
Maybe more. Like, it's almost their entire lives are fed grass. And I don't want to bash Kerrygold, because I buy Kerrygold butter most of the time, and I still think it's better than most, like, generic butters out there. You did say, like, there's very little, like, significant difference between, or nutritional difference between grass-fed and just, like, conventional. Or grass-fed, 100% grass-fed versus conventional.
Yeah.
But one of the differences is, like, that vitamin A is higher in 100% grass-fed. And that vitamin A will kind of come up. You'll see like a yellow, like hint, like some yellow coloring in the fat, either on that fat of the ribeye or in this case, the butter. And I notice that when I buy Kerrygold butter, it's a little yellow. If I buy like just, you know, cheap store brand butter, it's like pure white. So I can tell just from looking at it, there's more vitamin A in that product. So Kerrygold is a little bit better. And I don't notice that much of a difference if I do buy the 100%. Grass-fed butter compared to the Kerrygold, like when it comes to coloring. So, I mean, maybe like if I look into it, maybe there's some more vitamin K or some of the other ones, but that vitamin A isn't really showing up, at least in the coloring of the butter.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's true. There is a visual way to tell quality, at least for one vitamin that is a vitamin A. And like Tom said, Kerrygold, I don't think Kerrygold is a bad brand. And over the years, I've kind of, I guess, lightened my opinion on grass-fed, grain-finished cattle. Like, I really think grain-finished cattle have a place in just our food network. Like, there literally isn't enough cows that are 100% grass-fed to feed people, either through beef or milk, like whatever we're talking about. So, and grain-finished has so many other things to do with it. So I think grain-finished cattle has a place. And, but yeah, I mean, I understand this guy. I feel bad for him. I think it's kind of extreme to sue a company over this. Like, he must be real passionate about getting, like, the best quality butter out there. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I would never sue a company over this.
Well, beef is, like, kind of, like, the wrong place to be trying to make this difference. I mean, the real difference is with, like, chicken, with salmon,
yes,
with, like, pork. Like, that's a big difference between properly raised and, like, conventionally raised. When it comes to beef, I mean, even if you are buying, like, the worst beef out there, it's still spending, like, 85% of its lifetime eating a natural diet out in the natural air with, like, other cows around it. It's living a pretty good life for at least 85 to, like, 90, 95% of its life, no matter what.
Yep.
So it's like, cows is not the place to really be, like, splitting those hairs.
Yeah, that's like, not the hill
to die on. Do it with chicken, do it with fish.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a great point. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, yeah, you can find that article on the website. So TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. You can just go to the post with all these notes on it. So you can click that link and read the article if you want. It's pretty interesting, but, you know, that's the gist of it. That's our opinion on it. And like I said in the intro, me and Tom referenced a study a few weeks back. And we initially thought this study was kind of not the best. Like, maybe they use BMI as a marker for health. And that's why they concluded that 88% of Americans are unhealthy. And because BMI is such a shit metric, like if you base me, like my health purely off of BMI, I would be considered unhealthy. Like I'd be part of the 88%, but that's 100% not true. So we actually went into the study and read it. And the study title is called Prevalence of Optimal Metabolic Health in American Adults, National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey 2009-2016. And again, this whole study is on the website if you want to find it. But the gist of it is it looked at 8,700 people, and this data is purely based off a survey, so it's not the best data. It's not like they actually went in and, you know, did it themselves, just they asked people questions. But the study's conclusion was the prevalence of metabolic health in American adults is alarmingly low, even among people who are normal weight. And so the alarmingly low is 12%. They determined that only 12% of Americans are metabolically healthy. And I really like that they added, even among people who are normal weight, because it's just, I guess, a common misconception that if you're skinny, you're healthy. And a lot of the times that can be true. You know, people carrying on extra weight, if they're just heavy set, that's like an alarm flag. That should be like, a red flag that something metabolically is going wrong. But still, you can be skinny fat. You can be skinny and still extremely unhealthy. Skinny and diabetic, skinny, high blood pressure, all those things. So not just skinny isn't healthy, you know, not all the time, at least.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, looks can be deceiving. You can't really... I remember being asked this in one of my, like, health classes when I was back in school, is what does a healthy person look like? And a lot of people were trying to, like, explain, like, you know, some star athlete or something like that. And I was like, there is no way you can tell. Like, you know, like, a crackhead is skinny. Like, you don't know, like, how many drugs, like, this professional athlete is on.
Yeah.
Like, sure, he might look great, but, I mean, like, inside, he might be doing so much damage from all this, like, different gear that he's on. So, like, there's really no way to tell just by looking at somebody if they're healthy or not.
Yeah, and honestly, I see this a lot with COVID nowadays. And, like, I don't really want to go into my whole opinion on COVID because it's not, like, the popular opinion, to be honest. But people who know me know this, right? And they show me, like, pictures or cases of young people who are apparently fit who die from COVID. You know, and they're like, oh, what about this? Like, this person was young and they died. This person was in shape and they died. Or at least caught COVID and got really sick. And my answer is always, like, you can't judge this person's metabolic health purely on their outside appearance. And one case that stood out to me super clear was this man. He was in his 40s. He was muscular, probably worked out a lot, and visually looked healthy. And he caught COVID. He didn't die, but he obviously got really sick. And later on, it came out that if you went through like his Twitter and his Instagram feed, the guy's diet was complete trash. He lived on fast food, high sugar diet, just not healthy eating at all. But the guy was a gym rat and most likely on some sort of PED. And so visually, he looked healthy. But if you just base off what he ate, he obviously had some sort of metabolic condition and wasn't healthy on the inside. And that's why it made him more susceptible to catch COVID and to also have like a bad reaction when he did catch it.
Yeah, and that is a great like tie-in with this study because some of the biggest risk factors for having like a severe outcome with that are metabolic issues. Obesity, that was one of the biggest risk factors. Diabetes was a huge risk factor. High blood pressure was like another really huge like risk factor. And all of those are included in this study that we're about to talk about.
Yeah. So let's just go through. So what markers did they actually use to determine health? And like I said, I initially thought they used like simple BMI, but they really didn't. So the markers.
Yeah, I thought the same thing because like it is misleading because they do talk about BMI later on in the study. So when I just like skimmed through it and I saw that BMI was listed on there, I was like, man, this is a trash study. Why does it get repeated all the time?
Yeah, like, who cares about BMI? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so the markers they used to define metabolic health were blood glucose, triglycerides, HDL, also known as good cholesterol, total cholesterol, blood pressure, and waist circumference. So that's a pretty broad marker, or a pretty broad like metric for overall health. Like, I like those markers.
There's one more. Also, you couldn't be using any medication that would change any of these numbers. So you can't have good blood pressure because you're on high blood pressure medication.
Yeah, yeah.
So those people were not included in
this. Actually, I really like that, by the way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, you can have great blood pressure. You can have a good blood glucose because you're taking, you know, a bunch of drugs to take care of that for you.
Yeah, but it's just masking the problem. Yeah, it doesn't mean you're healthy. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I just kind of want to go through those markers because they are good, but they could be better, in my opinion. So, like, blood glucose is not the best marker, especially, like, for something like diabetes. What would be better than that? And that would be blood insulin levels because a lot of the times, for years, someone's blood insulin levels will be elevated before their blood sugar goes to shit. So the blood sugar will still read, say, in the 80s to 100s, but their insulin will be through the roof. It's not until their pancreas can't keep up, it's not until their body is super insulin resistant that their blood sugar actually spikes. But they've been essentially pre-diabetic for years. So measuring insulin is better than measuring blood glucose.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I can understand why they don't, because it's a little bit more of an invasive test, and that's not done everywhere. So you mentioned earlier how this was like a survey or an epidemiological based off of surveys, and that's partially true.
Yeah.
But it's also, they are looking at lab measurements. So it is a lot better than most, like, just traditional questionnaire studies. So, I mean, they are looking at lab measurements. Yeah, I do agree blood insulin levels would be the way to go. Because then you could kind of see, like, is this person insulin resistant? Maybe they're not diabetic yet, but they're, like, trending that way. Because that'll give you that red flag before that fasting blood glucose will.
Yep. And the second marker was triglycerides. I think that's good. Measuring HDL, I think that's good as well. And this is all in the context of a normal people eating of a standard American diet. If you're eating a low-carb diet, triglycerides and HDL matter. I guess the ranges matter way less because you're eating a high-fat diet, so those numbers can be a little different. But measuring them anyways is good. Cholesterol, in my opinion, is not the best thing to measure, like total cholesterol. What they should really look at is like the HDL to triglyceride ratio. That's a real good measure of actual metabolic health. And if you want to learn more about that, just cholesterol, we have a whole podcast on it. It's one with eggs. I think it's like in the 40s or 50s. So you can back and or go back and listen to that. It's actually pretty good. The next one is blood pressure. I think that one's a real good marker for health. Like that's pretty easy to measure. And the last one was waist circumference. And I think that's good. That's way better than BMI. A better one would be waist to height ratio. So like I said in the intro, like someone like my BMI would be considered unhealthy. I'm like 6'1", 6'2", maybe like 225. I would be in like the overweight category. I think a BMI, a healthy BMI for me is like in the 180s. So I'm like 40 pounds overweight. But if you measure my height to weight ratio, I'm extremely healthy because I have no waist at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the measurement they were using for waist circumference, they had it in the metric system, so I had to do a little bit of math to convert it over. So for men, they were looking at like a 40 inch waist and below, and for women they're looking at like a 34 inch waist and below to be considered healthy. And I'm with you, I don't think that's a good measurement either, because there's a lot of people, the person that comes to mind is like Jimmy Moore, who was 400 pounds at one point in his life.
Yeah.
And now he's down to like 250, I think, somewhere in that range. And he's been trying for years, and he's, like, never really been able to get, like, under that. And I don't know what his waist circumference is. I don't know if it's 40. It's probably, like, around that range. But he's been trying for years, and he's probably never going to get any thinner than what he is now. But I'm willing to bet his fasting blood glucose, his triglycerides, his HDL, all those other measurements, I'm sure those are all optimal for him because he's on a great diet. I don't know if he's still following a carnivore diet, but I know he was about earlier this year. So, like, yeah, I'm sure he, you know, is acing all those other measurements. But just when it comes to waist circumference, I don't know, like, where he's at with that. So it would exclude some of those people that used to be extremely overweight. They've lost a lot. But, hey, they still don't fit into this. So, yeah, I'm with you. I don't really agree with you. Or, I mean, agree with that as a measurement.
Mm.
But the people that did this study, they also saw that as a flaw in the study. And they showed later on in the study, like, if you take out that waist circumference from the equation, the percentage rose to about 18% of Americans being metabolically healthy.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, shit, is 40? See, 40 sounds really big to me. Like, I've never been over a 32 in my life. And you haven't either. You have a tiny waist, too.
Yeah, I don't even know where I'm at right now. Yeah. I have a belt for everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know exactly how big that is. I mean, that doesn't sound... Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know. I can't really relate to that, but...
Me either.
I don't know. I know there are those people out there. I mean, especially like if you're an athlete or something, if you're like an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman or like a sumo wrestler or something
real
like
big,
that...
Yeah, real big waist.
You have a real big waist, but that doesn't really mean you're, quote-unquote, like unhealthy. Yeah. I mean, you could be. But you also could be having great measurements and everything else.
Yeah, that's
I know Paul Saladino's been talking about that a lot lately, saying that sumo wrestlers have great metabolic health despite being extremely fat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And so the study highlighted that the most, this is like the most obvious shit on the planet to me, but they really did highlight that the most unhealthy segment in the population were obese, had less than a high school education, were not physically active, and were current smokers. Like, I don't even know why they had to put that in the study. Like, doesn't everyone know that?
Yeah, I was kind of with you, but I was honestly surprised the current smokers or the people that have never smoked, there wasn't that big of a difference. I was expecting there to be a much bigger gap.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But, like, obviously those people are going to be the most sick.
Yeah. I mean, the other one, which I thought was clearly the most obvious, was age.
Mm-hmm.
Age was, like, the biggest one, because you're looking at, if you're 20 to 39, about 23% of those people are considered to be metabolically healthy. 40 to 59, 9% of them are considered to be metabolically healthy. And 60 and over, only 2%.
Yeah, it says young people that carry that average to 12, even though it's still low as shit.
And I think the biggest thing, especially in that 60 and over category, has got to be medication. Because, I mean, I don't know anybody over 60 that's not on
something.
Lipitor or something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Yeah, that, like, took off 90% off the top right there.
Yeah, so, I mean, just because, like, once you hit a certain age, you go to the doctor, you're going to start getting a bunch of drugs that you don't need or most likely don't need. So, yeah, I think that's really what skews that 2%. Makes it, like, you're pretty much almost impossible to be metabolically healthy if you're over 60, according to the study, which I don't really agree with.
Yeah, I don't agree with either. Like, but it, the majority aren't, and that's just a fact, you know?
Yeah.
And only 1% of obese adults were considered healthy, and people who exercise more tend to have better health markers. So those are kind of both, like, obvious things as well. Like, working out and taking care of your health kind of go hand in hand. Most people do both. And you can be obese and healthy. It's possible. You know, you can have a really high personal fat threshold. You can just carry 200 pounds, 300 pounds, and your cells can grow. Your fat cells can grow in a way, so something called hyperplasia. So you literally grow new fat cells, and those fat cells stay insulin sensitive and they do not get inflamed. But just like this study said, only 1% of them are that. And a lot of people do not get fat that way. They get fat in a way called hypertrophy. So their fat cells literally increase in size. And as they increase in size, they become more and more insulin resistant and more inflamed. And that's why just being obese leads to so many other conditions, and why being obese is a huge marker for, like, COVID or for any other thing. You know, just being obese is not healthy for the vast majority of people. And I know that's, like, not very politically correct these days. Like, you know, like Paul Saladino said, you know, there's sumo wrestlers who are healthy. And I'm not arguing with him, but that is, like, a subgroup of healthy people. Like, you know, the vast majority of obese people are not going to be metabolically healthy.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, you are talking about professional athletes. I mean, these guys are exercising all the time. Yeah, like, they are the exception. They're not the rule.
Not the rule, yeah. So I think the big question that you have to ask if you read this study, even if you just read the, you know, the headline, why is everyone fat and sick? Like, why? Like, 88%, that's huge. And even if you take the guidelines down, you make a little more slack, 18%, like, that's not a lot of us. So in my opinion, what's to blame? It's the food guidelines. Like, simply put, the vast majority of foods recommended as healthy aren't healthy. And that's just, that's hard for people to believe. And obviously people don't believe it. You know, we fight with people all the time who tell us, you know, to do margarine, don't do butter. To do white meat, don't do red meat. Low salt, high fiber, high carb, all this crap. We know that's not healthy, but that is the guideline. That was put in 1977. That was the law, pretty much. And ever since then, America and the world, because the world takes Americans' lead, has gotten fatter and sicker. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I really wish we could have this same study done 100 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Just to, you know, compare.
It'd be the exact opposite.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet it would have been 12% are metabolically unhealthy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, just some of the other things that kind of stood out to me, that women were better than men, according to this study.
Mm-hmm.
Women were 14%, so they were bringing up that average. Men were only at 10%. I guess we're part of that 10, bringing that one up.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, there were women do, there's, it's just, I don't know, it's weird how the sexes, we're both susceptible to different things at different rates. Like, we've did the autoimmune disease, like, we've done a keto for autoimmune, and women were, what was the, it was like 10 times more likely for autoimmune conditions? What was the ratio, you remember, or the rate?
I think it was something like 10 times. I don't remember exactly.
It was a lot, though.
It was a lot, and I can't believe we missed that in the research.
Yeah.
We talked about that in the pill episode.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
And there's a, I mean, that probably has something to do with it.
Oh, I think it does. Yeah, no doubt. And, like, women are less, like, so they're way more likely to suffer. I think also Alzheimer's and more, like, mental conditions, women are more likely. And autoimmune women are more likely. But things like heart disease, men are way more likely to get heart disease and suffer heart attacks. So it's kind of a yin and yang there. You know, we're both susceptible to different things at different rates.
Yeah, I mean, we're still trying to figure out exactly what it is. I mean, it all has to do with our hormones eventually. We just kind of have to figure out what are the other influences that are affecting our hormones that way.
Yeah, so really, like, in my opinion, like I said, it's the food guidelines that are to blame. People think grains are healthy. People think they need to eat whatever. If you look at, like, any sort of macro tracking app, like MyFitnessPal is a big one, and you put in your height and weight, it'll say for the vast majority of people to eat 200 to 300 grams of carbs a day. And that blows my mind. But they have to do that because that is the standard. That's what they're told to recommend. That's what they're told is healthy. And they cannot be further from the truth. And even within that, let's say if you ate 200 grams of white rice a day and you were an extreme athlete, yeah, you can probably get by with that. No problem. But it's not that. They're not even recommending white rice. They're recommending brown rice. They're recommending whole wheat bread. They're recommending all these wheat products that are literally the worst type of carbs you can get. They're not even recommending the easily digestible carbohydrates that don't contain all these other anti-nutrients and all these other just pesticides and shit that's all over it that make it even worse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly they're just recommending that you eat grains, grains, grains. And if you just overeat the same type of food like that, like grains all the time, you're getting so much gluten, you're getting so many pesticides along with it that you're just destroying your gut. There's no nutrients in that food either, except for the stuff that they add later, which really isn't even bioavailable. So you're basically just eating a bunch of just empty calories with a bunch of harmful stuff that's going to destroy your gut, destroy what you're actually able to absorb, and it's going to lead to stuff like autoimmune issues and a whole bunch of other issues and just destroy your metabolic health. And we haven't even gotten started on just the whole industrial seed oils, which I think is, I mean, it's like grains, sugar, industrial seed oils. Those are the three big, that's like the unholy triangle.
Yep.
That's like destroying everybody's health out there.
Yeah, it is. Did you read that thing on polio I sent you today?
I did not get a chance to it.
Okay, read it eventually. It's very interesting. So if anyone's interested on us to do a podcast on polio, let me know. I was not interested until this morning. Twitter is an amazing thing. Like on Twitter, I always follow just, honestly, nerds. Just people who are way smarter than me. And this guy posted this whole thread, like mega thread, on polio. And, oh man, it like blew my mind. I've never been more interested in polio in my life. But it does talk about pesticides, and it does talk about their role in gut permeability and leading to leaky gut and what that can cause in our body and how that is like damn near the root cause of the vast majority of conditions. So very interesting stuff. If that's something you'd be interested in listening or learning about, shoot me an email. I'll definitely do the research on that. But that's a whole side note. But another thing that bugs me as far as everyone being metabolically unhealthy and fat is that exercise is kind of used as a cure-all. Like, if just if you're fat, if you're sick, if you're not feeling good, everyone tells you, oh, just go outside and walk, or go run, or go hit the gym. And it's just, that's not a cure-all. Like, you cannot outrun a bad diet. Like, the vast, vast majority of people can't. Your body will break down eventually.
Yeah, and then what's going to happen once you break down? You're going to start getting fat, because, like, now you got used to a diet that you're able to outrun for a while, for a short period of time. But now that you're not able to outrun it, it's going to catch up with you, and it's going to catch up with a vengeance.
Yep. And the sad thing is, like, I know this, right? I know this. Doctors think, the vast majority of them at least, that their patients are lying or non-compliant. And that's why they're still fat and sick. It can't be, like, they can't self-reflect. It can't be the patient's fault. It can't be their fault. It can't be that they're giving bad advice. Like, it has to be the patient's fault. And I'm like, it's damn near the exact opposite. A lot of people out there do try. A lot of people out there do follow the guidelines. They eat low fat. They eat low salt. They watch their cholesterol. They don't eat eggs every day because they're told not to. And they still go to the doctors and they're diabetic. They still go to the doctors and they have high cholesterol. And the doctor's like, yeah, sure. Sure you're trying. Sure you're working out. They just don't believe them because they think the advice they're giving is correct. When all along for the past 50 years, the advice they've been giving is leading to these conditions. They just can't see it.
Yeah, Dr. Ken Berry is like a great person to follow because of this. And he came up to the, with that epiphany. I think he was like up to 300 pounds. And he's like, he was just kind of like looked in the mirror one day. He's like, wait, I'm fat and sick. Like, I look just like my patients.
And
like,
I'm doing what's right.
My advice isn't working.
Yeah.
And now that full, and now he's carnivore. He's been preaching low carb, ketogenic lifestyles, like diets for quite a while. He has a book out there called Lies My Doctor Told Me, which is just like straight on that topic right there. It's just like, yeah, this is what we were taught. What I spent so much money, spent so much time like learning all this stuff. Like, it can't be wrong. Everybody that was teaching me this stuff was also brilliant. So like, there's no way that information could be wrong when in fact, like, yeah, a lot of it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, a lot of it is wrong. So I didn't want to end this podcast on such a negative note. So how can you increase your health if you find yourself in that 88% group, which obviously most people are going to be in that group? In my opinion, it's simple. I have three recommendations. It's not complicated. You don't have to track your food. You don't have to track your workouts, nothing. Just eat whole foods. When you go to the supermarket, just go around the outsides. Do you want milk? Do you want cheese? Go ahead. Do you want vegetables? Go ahead. But get some meat in there. Get some protein. Go around the outside of the supermarket. You'll be good. When it's sunny outside, go get some sun. Expose your skin to the sun every day if you can. Even if you're super white like me, your body can handle 10 to 20 minutes. You'll be fine. And also, lift some weights. Get stronger. Muscle and strength is never a weakness. You don't have to go to the gym and be scared or intimidated by big gym bros, nothing like that. You can just do air squats. You can do push-ups. You can do pull-ups. You can do crunches. But do something. Put some muscle on your frame, and I guarantee your older self will thank you. So those are my simple recommendations.
Oh, yeah, that was perfect. I mean, the other thing that I would add to that is just make sure you're getting enough sleep, like at least like 7 to 9 hours, somewhere around in that range. Like, other than that, yeah, I loved your big three. Like, those are perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's it. It's unfortunate that the vast majority of Americans, and honestly the vast majority of the world, is just heavy set and or just not metabolically healthy. And it's sad but true. So if you can change it, just stop listening to the authority, stop listening to, honestly, your dietitian, and regain your health.
Yeah, that's some great advice. So when you first came across that BMI part of it, were you hoping that this study was bullshit? Were you hoping that it was wrong? That, like, there was more people that were healthy and this was just a bad study? Because that's what I was thinking. That's why.
Yeah, the number was so skewed one way. I thought it had to be just shittier than what it was. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be a lot of bad measurements because I saw cholesterol in there and I saw BMI when I just first scanned it. And I was like, oh, that's why this study is so bad. And then I, like, actually read through and I was like, no, like, I couldn't design a much better like test than this. I mean, the only one that's like waist circumference is like the only kind of issue with it. But I mean, you're still looking at 82% of people being unhealthy.
Yeah, the number didn't change that much.
Yeah, it's still a scary number.
Still a scary number, yeah. So, all right, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. On Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Please rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.